You're listening to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com. And my name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee's in here with me again.
My hand's on the controls.
Last week's show, she didn't join me on the show because we had a really cool interview with a person from National Public Radio, which was very interesting.
And we have another cool interview coming up. In fact, tell everybody what they're going to hear.
Well, what we've got coming up here is I went back to Podcaster Con, which was back in North Carolina. It was in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and spent a day back there at that event. It was like an unconference-type format. And then we're also going to speak about my trip down to the Consumer Electronics Show down in Las Vegas during the same time frame. And we're also going to have a conversation with Rick Alderson, who is with PDPPlanet.com project. And what this is a Paul Allen project to resurrect and maintain a lot of the old-time mainframe computers that basically were around back in the 60s to keep them online and give people access to be able to play with those.
Oh, fascinating. Didn't you say something like there was like $1 million computer over there?
Well, exactly. There's a couple of them there that back in the 60s when these computers were put together originally, they cost almost $1 million. They take up like half of a room.
In 60s money.
Yeah, that was really expensive back
and
then.
And yet, comparable power to maybe your pocket PC.
Yeah, exactly. They had about as much processing power as a pocket PC.
I love
it.
So
it'll be really interesting to speak with him. We can be reached at rob@webtalkradio.com, and Dana can be reached at dana@webtalkradio.com. We appreciate you tuning in the show, and thanks for listening again, as usual. If you're a longtime listener, we appreciate your loyalty to us. And if you're new, welcome to the show, and certainly check out our website at webtalkradio.com, and we've got a bunch of archive shows there that have really interesting, I think anyway, of course I'm a little close to it, conversations with technologists and people from the internet all across the world over the last, 6 years we've been doing this now?
Seven years.
And we're also proud members of the techpodcast.com network. If it's tech, it's here, and this network has a lot of great technology podcasts, and you can subscribe to this podcast at podcast.yahoo.com. iTunes, Odeo, Replay Radio, and Mobilecast at mobilecast.com. You're listening to webtalkradio.com, brought to you by GoToMeeting.
Todd Cochran here from the Geek News Central podcast. By now, you've probably heard that the Tech Podcast Network uses GoToMeeting to conduct online business meetings and training. But did you know that GoToMeeting is the easiest way for any organization to conduct online business meetings? I asked /.reviews Andy McCaskey what he liked best about GoToMeeting.
I like the way you could set up a meeting without cumbersome reservations. Just log on, push Meet Now, and your meeting begins.
Sounds too good to be true? Try GoToMeeting for yourself for 30 full days. You don't need a credit card. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech roundtable or click on the GoToMeeting link on your podcaster's website.
You're listening to Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com. My name is Rob Greenlee. Dana Greenlee is in here as well. Well, Dana, we should probably talk about PodcasterCon and CES and all those cool topics.
Now, you said something intriguing. You said it was an unconference. What the heck does that mean?
An unconference is basically a conference that's not as structured as what you typically would envision for a conference to be. The other term that's used to describe this is that it's like a user conference. It's not so much a vendor conference where you're being presented to products and services, and it's not as commercial, essentially is what it is. So what you're doing is you're creating conversations amongst people.
I think it's more productive. And it's on the campus of Chapel Hill. And
North Carolina. The Tar Heels.
So, yeah, Michael Jordan's old stomping grounds.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and while I was there at the conference, there was a game going on, a basketball game.
I know you were just dying
to
go.
It was a sacrifice.
You're such a basketball freak.
It was a major sacrifice going to this conference or going to see the Tar Heels play North Carolina State.
So you're in a room with a couple hundred podcaster types. And what was your takeaway? What did you see, you know, as a trend maybe starting there? Or did you see a lot of individual people? Or were they representing big conglomerates?
No, I didn't really see any trends coming out of it per se. I just saw some podcasters from the East Coast, which a lot of the people that were at this conference don't make it to the West Coast very often. So I got to meet a whole new group of people. There were some familiar faces there that I had met at the Podcast Expo. But the conversation was really just very, very good. It had kind of two levels. There was two basic distinct groups there, the ones that were what I would call really advanced podcasters, and ones that are kind of newbies to the business and stuff. So they the conference kind of went off in two different directions in that particular focus. But the topics that were covered were the whole spectrum from advanced hardware for recording to software and just the actual basics of doing a podcast as well.
What is the current? What is the software that you thought was kind of cool, or did you see any demonstrated other than we use CastBlaster?
Yeah, it's all the same stuff. There wasn't anything new that was revealed there, because it wasn't a product related conference. It was all focused on users trying to get suggestions from experienced people that can help them, streamline the process, make a better podcast, those kind of things. But there was a little bit more in-depth conversation that was going on around copyright and people using music in podcasts. So there was sessions along those lines. So it was fun. And there was also dinners and stuff afterwards. Everybody got together.
Yeah, I heard you gave away all your drink tickets.
I did. For some reason, I aggregated all these drink tickets, but I gave them all away because I only had two beers.
It was kind of like in prison when you had the cigarettes, right?
Yeah.
You had kind of like you had power and then you bought favors. Now, but before that, you went to Vegas. You were just like gone forever. You were like Vegas, North Carolina.
No, but it actually went by really fast because I was only gone like a day and a half each place.
Okay. It seemed like forever.
I mean, it seemed like a long time for you.
It did.
But it was like I was living in hotels and going to the airport.
I was incredibly lonely.
On a regular basis.
So, Vegas. Yes. Are you getting tired of Vegas, by the way?
Yeah, it doesn't have the magic for me anymore. I mean, I spent over a week down there last summer.
Oh, you're so jaded. I would like to go. Anyway, so you went basically for a gathering. You didn't make a quick trip through the hall, didn't you? But you went mainly to have a little meeting. And what was that meeting all about? What did you learn?
Yeah, I went down there to meet with a group of kind of media people that kind of get together. It was based on a group that was put together by Peggy Miles, who runs a streaming newsletter list.
Yeah.
So and she's been running that list for, I don't know, probably 6-7 years now, and has aggregated quite a following of leading, streaming media broadcast type people. And she regularly has groups that get together from around the country. And so it was really cool. I got to meet a guy who runs all of the digital media for Showtime and some of those kind of level of people. So it was really cool. And plus going around and spending time at the booth with Nokia and Motorola and trying to network a little bit with the whole mobile cast stuff. So it was fun.
One last thing I wanted to ask you, and what kind of trend did you see, or what kind of interesting observation did you make about the big announcements coming out?
Well, I think that the biggest thing that I noticed down there was that, and this is in contrast to what it was like down there 2 years ago when I was down there, was that there was more online companies involved in the conference itself. And most of the big announcements that came out of CES were media related. There wasn't so much buzz around hardware or gadgets down there this year as much as there was about how media is being integrated into those and the internet's being integrated into those devices. It seems like that's where the big buzz is. And I think as we move into next year, I think we're going to see that even more so. I think that the devices will become a little bit less important than what actually goes on in the devices, which is a natural evolution. It's content's what drives all this stuff. So if there isn't good content, and I think that's the big thing that's been holding back the consumer electronics business is the fact that it's not easy to get content into some of these portable media players. So I think that's changing, though.
Thank you, Rob. That was a quick, fast report on two good conferences.
Yes, well, there was plenty more to share, but that's about all the time we have. And on the line right now, we have Rich Alderson, who is with PDPPlanet.com, which is a project with Paul Allen to bring back and maintain and restore, basically, mainframe mini computers from the 60s and the 70s. And he's going to tell us all about how he's bringing these million-dollar computer systems that took up half of a room and keeping them alive and as a resource for students and people that want to play with those kind of devices and maintain that connection, essentially, with the past. So, Rich, welcome to the show. I appreciate you calling in.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me along.
Why don't you kind of roll through for us what your job is with the PDP Planet project?
I'm the chief systems administrator. I am in charge of simply seeing that the machines run. Now, what that has meant is getting a hardware guy to come in and work with me, Keith Perez, whose name appears on the site as well, to first check out the machines, make sure, you know, this started 2.5 years ago with me going in and saying, these machines have been shut down for a couple of years at least. I need someone, you know, with more hardware experience to come in and tell me that if I turn them on, they aren't going to blow up. You know, Keith came in and had been working on similar systems, you know, for as long as I have, and took one look and said, can I keep doing this with you? And so we've had a great partnership for 2.5 years now.
Why don't you run through for us why Paul Allen thought that we needed to have a site and a project to kind of bring back all of the past.
Okay. I'll just go back a little bit in history. Back in the early to mid-90s, I was working for a company over in Redmond called XKL, and we were building a clone of these older DEC systems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are typical 1970s room-sized computers, and the thing that we were building at XKL was about the size of a two-drawer file cabinet.
Sure.
Paul found out about us and actually bought one. He came to visit us at XKL, and this was the first time that I heard him explain what it was that he wanted to accomplish with these. And that's why I wanted to give a little historical background, that this has been on his mind for a very long time. For years now, especially in the personal computer area, but also with servers, the answer to any resource issue has been get a faster processor, get more memory, get bigger disks.
Mm-hmm.
But we're running up against now the laws of physics. We can't make them much faster. We can't make them, you know, all that much bigger. So we've got to start working in what's essentially a limited resource area. Now, the limits are much larger than they were in the 70s.
Sure.
But the kinds of programming that got done on systems like the DEC 10 and DEC 20 were some of the biggest breakthroughs in areas like artificial intelligence, databases. You know, these things were invented on this kind of hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done in what was a very limited resource environment. Disk drives, large disk drives, were under 500 megabytes. That's megabytes, not gigabytes.
Well, back then, that was a lot of memory, though.
It was a lot of space, but even then, we knew that data was going to get bigger than that. And so, you know, we had to be smart about how we programmed.
Mm-hmm.
What Paul wanted to see was that the techniques that we learned under those conditions didn't get lost when it came time for people to have to do the same sort of thing on a 500 gigabyte disk and, you know, a CPU that ran literally a million times as fast as, you know, the ones we were using.
Certainly that makes sense that, you know, making software where it's really efficient is always great, I would imagine. I mean, it's really easy to, you know, if you have a lot of memory to just use it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you know, what you can do actually at the site itself. And now I know that, you know, I've been reading about the actual project itself, and there's some really kind of cool stuff you can do. You guys can actually give access to some of these older systems to help people kind of learn how to do it. But why don't you go in a little more detail about that?
Okay. Yeah, right now we have it set up so that you can, by getting on the PDP Planet website, request accounts on two of our mainframe systems. One is a DEC system. It was originally a DEC system 20, but we're running the TOPS 10 operating system on it. Back in the 70s, it was a marketing thing, whether it was a DEC System 10 or a DEC System 20,
oh, okay.
It was defined by which operating system you were running. But the hardware was essentially the same between the two systems.
Oh.
So we're running, you know, we've named it DEC10.pdpplanet.com. It's running the TOPS 10 operating system, but the physical hardware has, you know, bright orange labels on it that say DEC System 20. The other system that you can get an account on is the XKL system, which is called a Toad 1, which is an old joke in the industry. You know, we just ended up using that as the name for the system. And that's running the TOPS 20 operating system. So depending on which one that you're interested in or both, you can get accounts on either one. The Toad running TOPS 20 is sitting directly on the internet, Ethernet interfaces, and you just, you know, telnet into it. The DEC 10 is a little different in that it does not have an Ethernet interface or any other networking interface. So what we've had to do is make connections through its old hardwired terminal ports to a little server sitting on the net that just allows you to telnet into that, and it connects you directly to one of the lines into the system.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because that particular computer system was pre, you know.
It's pre everything
yeah.
but the original ARPANET.
And
we don't have that old gear, which was a whole other large computer.
Sure. Well, now, why don't you give us a little bit of background on these actual systems that you're using here, and what kind of processor power do they have? What's the basis of the software? Is it? I mean, I would imagine it's quite different than what we see in a Windows XP today.
Oh, certainly, because to start with, it's all command line.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's used to using DOS would not be terribly uncomfortable with the user interface. But, you know, there's no graphical use at all. Which, by the way, is not to say that they didn't have graphics capabilities, but it was, you know, special-built hardware, and the programming was all done down at the assembly language level.
Oh, okay.
We can get back to that in a moment.
Sure.
But, so when you log in, you're sitting at a prompt, either a period prompt for TOPS 10 or an @ prompt for TOPS 20, and then you type in commands to start an editor, to run a compiler, to start a mail program to read email, all kinds, you know, anything that you want to do, you have to type command to a command line prompt, and then the program that you're in will, if it needs more input, give you a prompt, and you type into that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as the processors on the machine, these are 1 MIPS machines, 1 million instructions per second.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually one of the machines in the mid-70s that defined what a million instructions per second meant mm-hmm. in terms of processor power. They are also not byte-oriented machines.
Uh-huh.
The memory on the machine is defined in terms of 36-bit words.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you're storing text, you store 5 7-bit ASCII characters of text per word in a file, and the extra bit at the end is just, you know, left 0.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the packing is done automatically by the operating system, and the hardware has special assists in it to recognize that kind of text. So, the user doesn't ever have to worry about how it's stored unless, you know, he's doing text processing in an assembly language program.
Oh, okay. Well, now, I think I read in your guys' press release that one of these computers sold for about $16,000 and had the computing power of a calculator, basically. Is that, would that be a fair way of, you know, saying what the power of these computers had?
The one that that was true of in the press release is one of the mini computers mm-hmm. that deck built, the PDP-8, which was a little 12-bit computer.
Oh, okay.
And we do have some of those in the collection. We have concentrated, though, on the large mainframes and getting them running, because there are a number of hobbyists around the world who have PDP-8s and 16-bit PDP-11s. That experience is not as foreign to people as the old mainframe stuff is, so we wanted to get those running first. Mm-hmm. We will eventually make the 8s and 11s available as well, but it will that's a ways down the road for us.
Oh, okay.
Now, one of these systems, when new, would cost, with all its disk drives and other peripherals attached, close to $1 million.
Wow.
And that's, it's $1,000,000 1970s dollars.
Sure. That's worth a lot of money. What would you say they're worth now when they're in operating order right now? Are they worth much, or what's the situation with them now?
Because there are so few of them left in the world, it's really difficult to put any kind of pricing on them.
Wow.
It's more a matter of the people that still have them wanting to keep them preserved and therefore, just working with each other to get things done.
So is it a challenge for you guys to keep them operating? I mean, is it difficult to get parts and things like that for them to keep them functioning?
The lowest level parts are not extremely difficult to get hold of. There are still, military specifications that require the same kinds of parts these things were built with, because the military, tries not to change things. If they work, they don't change how they do them.
Mm-hmm.
So that the parts are still manufactured. What's more difficult to find, really, even than the CPUs, is peripherals.
Oh, yeah.
Because, tape drives, disk drives, anything mechanical, just wears out over the years, and so those are harder to find than parts for the CPUs themselves.
Oh, okay, so are you going to have to match up kind of modern drives and things with these machines to keep them operating, you think, over time?
It's interesting that you ask that, because one of the things that Keith has been designing is an interface that will let us use the I/O ports on the DEC 10 to connect to a networked file server, and we'll be able to emulate one of the old disk drives, and it will look to the system just as if it were talking to one of those disk drives, brand new, fresh off the assembly line.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not the first to come to this conclusion. There was a company that sold a device in the late 80s that would let you connect SCSI disks to DEC 10 or DEC 20 that was basically an IBM PC on one side and I/O connector on the other.
Mm-hmm. So are you guys involved in working with these, with other types of computers that are maybe more modern? Are you guys building a collection that spans the whole space of time from the 60s all the way up to today at all, to try and keep those computers available for future people to be able to get access to?
We're really concentrating more on the older systems simply because they are in the most danger.
Yeah.
There are a lot more of the newer systems out there, mm-hmm. and people tend not to throw them away. They pass them down to the next tier of users. Mm-hmm. They get donated to schools, or they get donated to missions to other countries, that sort of thing. So
okay, I'm sure it's a big enough job just keeping track of these, I'm sure, and keeping these going for now. But if you look out in the future, though, the whole space of PCs and that have evolved over time, it would be important to try and keep those functioning so people can see those as well.
Right. And there are other, there are efforts to, preserve the earliest of those.
Oh, really?
As a matter of fact, Paul has funded a microcomputer museum down in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I believe that was mentioned in the press release as well, that that's being done. So the effort is there. It's just it's not what we're doing in the particular PDP Planet collection that, that we work with.
Yeah, if a person wanted to get an account on one of these systems, what would they face? What, I mean, what type of people are you looking for to actually set up accounts that can actually access this and use it and, you know, learn from it?
I haven't put any restrictions on who I grant an account to. I'm getting requests from high school students who, you know, say, you know, this sounds, you know, really cool, and I, you know, I'd like to get an idea of what it was like. And I'm getting accounts from, let's face it, grizzled veterans like myself, you know, who worked on these things at various times, you know, in the course of their careers. I've gotten requests from old DEC employees, for that matter, who are really excited that, you know, these things that they loved, you know, 20, 30 years ago are available again.
Yeah.
So interest is the only thing that I really look at. You know, are they interested? Fine, give them an account.
Is there any danger at all with giving so many people access to these things that can run scripts against them, and that it could damage them in any way?
Well, first off, it's difficult to write a script that would cause damage to these systems.
Okay.
The operating systems don't work in the way that modern systems do. They, you know, they've always been time-shared systems. They expected multiple users to be on at one time, and so the operating systems themselves were written in such a way as to protect each user from the others, not out of any fear of maliciousness, but just, you know, if someone's program crashed, you don't want to take down everybody else's.
Sure.
At the same time.
Sure. What are people actually doing with these systems? I mean, what kind of scripts are they putting together? What type of functionality are they trying to create on the computer?
I don't know what a lot of people are trying. I do know that some people are looking at the possibility of creating networking code for the TOPS 10 operating system that would let us do that. Actually, some people that I've known for years have gotten accounts, and the fact that this is available has made them start thinking about doing this. And these are people who, you know, helped, you know, invent the internet to begin with.
Oh,
so
okay.
If anyone can do it, they certainly can.
So what they're trying to do is take the processes that exist today and try and make it run on those more limited systems. Is that what they're?
Well, it's more the just to give it the capability of running.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Is there any other things that people are trying to do with those that you can think of right offhand?
I actually don't know what people have been trying to do. As I said, you know, I had more than 200 requests for accounts last week, and so it kind of got to be mechanical for me.
Sure.
Just, you know, they want an account, open it. They want an account, open it, and not really paying much attention to what they were proposing to do. I didn't see anyone proposing anything that made me sit up and worry about it. So,
sure.
I think most people just want to get on, you know, write some programs like they used to write, and it's mostly going to be a tourist kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, come on and try it out. But there are people that have been working with, you know, these systems or their descendants, you know, for years, and, you know, they still love them. Some of the people that are interested in doing the networking work, for example, have been interested in doing this for emulator programs that people have written to let the programs for these systems run on, you know, modern PCs.
Oh,
and so if you, you know, if you do the work for the hardware, then it'll also work on the emulator, and you just move on smartly.
Yeah, I can certainly see, you know, people wanting to play around with these things. What do you think about people, you know, that are maybe part of a university or whatever, that are teaching a class on computing? Is there a value in having that as part of that?
I would think so, because instead of having only one example of a hardware architecture, because let's face it, every computer out there these days, you know, is byte oriented and programmable in C, and so, you know, you you just think about it a certain way, having an entirely different kind of architecture opens your horizons. And, you know, we would certainly want to cooperate with you know, any faculty member that wanted, you know, an opportunity to use these things. We would certainly go along with that. Or, you know, any graduate student, undergraduate who, you know, thought, you know, this would be a great thing to do a project on.
Yeah, I think so. Well, Rich, thanks for joining me and explaining your PDP Planet project. It's great.
Well, thank you for asking me to talk to you.
Okay, great. Good luck with it, and I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you much.
Okay.
Good talking to you, Rob.
We've been speaking with Rich Alderson, who's with PDPPlanet.com, and he's been telling us all about the Paul Allen project to restore mainframe computers. So go check it out, and maybe you can sign up for a free account to get access to one of these mainframe computers. Well, Dana, that's all the time we have this week on the show.
I'm glad you all could join us once again, and appreciate that.
Thank you for listening, and check back with us next week. We'll have another show up, actually, on Web Talk Radio. Have a great week, and we'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.